Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I am joined by Pete Zayas. Pete, you've had an entire week to think about the LeBron James signing. We are. Last time we spoke was Sunday. Not an entire week, but most of a week to get here. How many times have you just like woken up and thought to yourself, "Holy crap, the Lakers have LeBron James"?
Dude, it's so, as you know, my girlfriend's a huge Laker fan, and that has basically been like, I get back from throwing out the garbage, I'm like, "Baby, we got LeBron." And just like random parts of the day, just, "Oh my God, we got LeBron." That's pretty much been the last, like, you know, several days.
It's been fun. I remember the morning after, Jen woke up and she goes, "Babe, was yesterday a dream? Did that actually?" So that's been kind of fun too. The way today's show is going to work, Adam is not going to be able to make Locked On NBA. So this is going to be a two-part podcast where Locked On Lakers, we're going to keep it a little bit more Lakers-centric. And then in the second part, which is going to go on to Locked On NBA, we're going to talk a little bit more about how the Lakers kind of figure into the entire league moving forward here. So make sure you guys are subscribed to both shows, and at the very least, check out the part two of this podcast, of this conversation, on the Locked On NBA feed. As always, you guys know where to find both shows. Locked On and Locked On Lakers can be found on Megaphone/Panoply, iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, Today's Fast Break, Spotify, Alexa, and Silver Screen and Roll. You can follow me on Twitter at Anthony Irwin LA. You can follow the show on Twitter at Locked On Lakers. And you can follow Pete on Twitter at Laker Film Room. All right, so we're, like I said, a few days removed. Some changes have been made to the roster, some additions, some subtractions, and that's what we're going to focus on part one here. Let's start with the Julius Randle thing and the saga, I guess, kind of, right? Because it felt like this was kind of sort of coming for 2 or 3 years now, especially after Magic kind of stepped in. When you got the news that Randle was renounced, my instant reaction was, well, shit. But did you have anything beyond that, any more productive thought beyond that?
No, I think I've been able to frame it decently after that. At the beginning, you know, my heart sunk when I saw that because I knew he was gone. I think the Lakers preferred to control their own destiny in terms of signing a max guy rather than having to rely on another team to take on Deng's contract or to take on Julius's contract. Julius would be back if the Lakers wanted to sign him to a multi-year deal, but they didn't want to interfere with their shot at a second max guy next summer. Mm-hmm. So, and he was, from what I understand, he communicated to the team, like, "Look, with the way things have gone, like, I don't want to be back here kind of twisting in the wind for another year, similar to how he was this past season." Mm-hmm. And he preferred to get a fresh start where under terms that were more under his own control. And that's what he did. I'm rooting for him and I'm happy for him. I would have loved the Lakers to try to re-sign him to that team friendly deal in a good market and then look to move him down the line if they needed to create that space for Kawhi. I think that would have been easily done, but they decided against that. So yeah, here we are.
I want to touch on, because this felt to me like a decision that was almost made heading into this last season, right? Where, you know, you spend the whole year hoping that they would come around or that he would come around to how he was being treated. And maybe both sides could move forward in a way that was productive for both sides, but it wasn't the case. And I think this kind of started with the way his minutes were yanked around at the beginning of the year, and you know the any kind of trade. It was just he never really felt like Magic's guys or one of Magic's guys. And I was hoping that Magic might be able to move beyond that, but it didn't seem like. It didn't seem like he was able to, seeing as he's no longer a Laker. Is that unfair to Magic? Is that unfair to Randle here? Or how would you analyze that situation?
I wouldn't say that it's unfair. I think that's accurate. I also think that it's a matter of timing too. Mm-hmm. I think the Lakers would love it if Randle had one more year left on his rookie contract.
Yeah.
Right. So that things could sync up a little bit better. I think it was more financial than anything else. You know, guys like Lonzo, Kuzma, Hart, and Ingram all have, you know, years ahead of them to where they don't get in the way of getting those two like ready-made guys. Like, I think the Lakers' ultimate plan is to get two legit max guys, of which they have one now, mm-hmm. and then surround them with as many of the young guys as they possibly can. So ideally not trading for Kawhi or trading for Lillard, but they will if they have to. And then as a LeBron gets older and he starts to decline gradually, or a Kawhi or a Lillard, guys like that gradually, that's right when guys like, you know, Ingram and Lonzo and Kuzma, or whomever it is, they start entering their prime. And so I think that's what the ultimate plan was. If Julius was in the second year of his rookie contract right now, going into his third, I think he'd probably be back. But it's just the timing didn't work out.
Yeah, and the other thing, too, to keep in mind with regards to free agents next year is not only is that important for the flexibility in and of itself, but it's also really important with their negotiations with the Spurs, because they can say if they had gone into their max cap space for next season and they had you know, given up any of that, the Spurs could hold over their heads. Well, there's a chance then that Kawhi might not sign with you guys because you guys don't have the space. Now the Lakers can go back to the Spurs and say, nah, actually, you guys either take the deal that we're offering, as disrespectful as you might find it to be, or we just get the guy for nothing next season. And that's an important aspect of the conversation here.
Yeah, it's a matter of like Julius, they valued Julius. They just didn't value him enough to change their plans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good way to put it. I would say that's a good way to put it. All right, we're going to take a quick second here, and we're going to talk about the ways that they either – it's hard to say replace Julius, because I'm not going to sit here and say JaVale McGee is a replacement for Julius Randle. But we're gonna talk about the additions that they've made here in the next segment. And then following that, in the third segment, we'll talk about some of the moves that are still yet to have been made. All that here in a bit. So the Lakers signed LeBron. And look, you spend a lot of time in the Silver Screen and Roll Slack. You follow me on Twitter. Most of you who are listening now follow me on Twitter as well. I was not exactly thrilled with the way the roster came together after the LeBron James commitment. I it's important. It's a weird thing to me. I don't want to jinx it and say signing, because LeBron James hasn't literally signed anything, and I don't want to, like, you know, say this. But anywho. After the LeBron James commitment, they go in and they go for Lance Stephenson for $4 million, reportedly, JaVale McGee for the minimum, reportedly, and then Rajon Rondo for the exact same amount of money that Julius Randle signed for in New Orleans, the $9 million, one-year contract that he got. Again, I'm not... Look, Rondo, I think there's an explanation for. Actually, Rondo would have been great for the Lakers last season because of the amount of time that Lonzo Ball missed. JaVale McGee on a one-year minimum deal, fine, okay. But the one that I can't wrap my head around, and that I can't figure out either on or off the court, is Lance Stephenson. And it's like, it's legit eating at me. that it just seems to make no sense whatsoever. So either talk me off the ledge here, or you can build on the points here. I just don't think he fits anywhere on the team.
Yeah, he's the one guy. The Lakers made a few moves that I disagreed with, but I understand. Julius Randle being one of them, who we just spoke about. The Lance Stephenson signing is the only signing – the only move that they've made where I've been like, I don't entirely get what they're even trying to do here.
Yeah.
The best case that I can make for him is, and you wrote on this today over at Silver Screen and Roll, about how they want to get tough playmakers, right? And Lance is the type of guy that doesn't back down, right? He's had his battles with LeBron, and LeBron respects that. And he's a pretty good passer for his position, for how mm-hmm. often he handles the ball. That's one of his stronger points. So if you look at it in aggregate, with adding LeBron, Rondo, and Stephenson to Lonzo and what the Lakers already have on the team in terms of playmaking, they're really trying to load up on that particular attribute, which mm-hmm. I like quite a bit. I feel like Lance is the least convincing of all of them, in that, like, of all of the guys the Lakers have on the team, Lance Stephenson is probably like fifth or sixth in terms of who I'd want with the ball in their hands on the perimeter. And that's kind of like what he does. So like when you're the fifth or sixth best guy on the team at the thing that you do best, you're probably not a great fit. You know what I mean? He's not going to be spot up shooting particularly well. So I don't know. I'm way more with you. That's the best rationalization that I can get.
The Rajon Rondo thing strikes me as interesting. I was surprised. I mean, it's a tiny sample. I was surprised at how capable he was as a spot up shooter last year, a catch and shoot kind of guy. It was way high. I think it was like 34% or something like that. Again, tiny sample size there. But in terms of along the guidelines that were reported by Brian Windhorst and Ramona Shelburne earlier today, that the Lakers wanted tough playmaking kind of guys. If you're just rolling with that explanation, then okay. Right.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, he does, I suppose, fit into that. I think though, that's ignoring like a lot of the bad about his game. You know what I mean? Like,
Well, I think it was, so one of the issues that you get with like coaches who are also executives or players who become executives is they overvalue their own personal experience, either with, against, or having seen a player. And so like with Magic, he saw Rondo when the Lakers and Celtics played in those finals, right? He witnessed that. Magic rooting, obviously, for the Lakers. And I think at that time he was kind of sort of associated with the team, at least as a part owner. So he got that. He got to see that. And then Rondo did play well in the playoffs this past year for the New Orleans Pelicans. And while he was on Chicago before he got hurt, you could actually see him kind of being the centerpiece of what would have been a crazy upset against the Boston Celtics. So, like, if all you're watching is that, then Rondo makes sense, right? But I don't think Magic or the people who are claiming that Rondo was a perfect fit here watched him for in bad situations on like random Tuesday nights against the Milwaukee Bucks, where he either wasn't trying or he was undercutting the coach in some circumstances. I know in Dallas there was some of that going on with Rick Carlisle. And those are the kinds of things where when you have Alonzo Ball, who was at one point the face of your franchise and now gets kind of kicked down the ladder a little bit here, like Rondo in theory is a good mentor for Rondo or for Lonzo. But I also could see him kind of undercutting Lonzo as they fight for minutes against each other. Am I crazy in thinking that might happen?
No, I don't think of Rondo as a mentor at all. I've heard that phrase tossed around a few times. Although perhaps I could only argue for it accidentally in that Rondo's going to come in and try and take his job. And try and kick his ass and take his job.
It's already been reported.
And maybe that's good for Lonzo. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like there are certain guys that are kind of what's the word I'm looking for? They're kind of like giving it all up front. They're anointed. That's the word I'm looking for early on. And that's not to say like I thought Lonzo was really good this year. And it's interesting hearing kind of like the national narrative and even the narrative amongst Laker fans. If you just look at the numbers, just like the analytics, like the analytics have Lonzo by far as the best young player.
Far and away.
The Lakers. But that's definitely not the opinion, I think, of Laker fans or of national media as a whole. So I do think that Lonzo earned it with his play in a tangible, objective way. But to me, like, bro, like, how long did you lament Tyler Ennis being this team's backup point guard? You know what I'm saying? Now I'm going to complain about having two, like, credible point guards.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, and no, Rondo isn't perfect. And you're right. On those Tuesdays in Milwaukee, maybe he doesn't bring the right amount of effort. I do think this is going to be a bit of a honeymoon year in some respects.
Yeah. He's also playing for another contract.
Sure. But he's been doing that for a while. I thought he was good in New Orleans last year. Like, I thought he was a big part of an offense that was, like, way better than people expected it to be. Mm-hmm. They had an upset in the first round. They kicked the crap out of Portland.
Yeah.
He outplayed Damian Lillard in the playoff series. Yep. Like, Absolutely. That guy for 1 year without any, like, long-term commitment – And if he knocks Lonzo around and slaps him around and toughens him up a little bit as I fold my arms, right? Like, then that's a good thing, I think.
Yeah. All right, we're going to take another quick second here. And I have not really a theory. It's just some analysis, some bigger picture analysis about the way that the Lakers are kind of put together now. And we'll look ahead to a couple of the moves that we both think need to be made. Brooke Lopez, come on down. we'll be back with that here in a second. So I'm okay. Again, Rondo. Computers, there. But with Lance, I we've been down that road. I'm not going to be able to talk myself into that at any point. What I do think, though, if this happens, if the kids are leaned on, then the moves make sense, right? If Luke Walton walks into training camp and says, look, Rondo is going to be the backup point guard. Lonzo, it's yours to lose. And until Lonzo plays so poorly that he loses that job, then okay, right? If Kyle Kuzma is told, all right, you're first wing off of the bench, even above Lance Stephenson, okay, cool. If Brandon Ingram is playing alongside or Kuzma, depending on how you want to play that out, but if Ingram is given the starting job over, say, Lance Stephenson, cool, great. If Josh Hart gets meaningful minutes off of the bench over, again, Lance, then great. So in summation here, if the kids are given the keys, even alongside LeBron James, then the roster makes a lot more sense. But if veterans start getting any kind of preferential treatment because they're veterans, that's when I think the Lakers are going to run into trouble.
I don't want either side of the fence to get preferential treatment. Like, mm-hmm. I don't want the kids to be handed the keys, but I also don't want vets to be given preferential treatment because they're good. Like, and this is one of those things that sounds great, and it's a lot more difficult to pull off as a coach, but it should be a meritocracy. You know, mm-hmm. like, I don't think that Lonzo should be told on the first day of training camp, this is your job to lose. Mm-hmm. He needs to outplay Rondo to be able to do that. And that's also something that isn't stagnant, right? Where if it starts out the year that way because Lonzo's playing like crap for some reason, and Lonzo can always earn his minutes on the court. It's not like he's going to be getting DNPs, right?
Yeah, it should not be put in – nothing should be set in stone with this team other than LeBron being LeBron.
Right, exactly. but I think you have enough – like part of – one of the main things that the front office has emphasized is competition and just being competitive. And part of that is it being a meritocracy, right? Where mm-hmm. everybody's able to, like, if you play your ass off and if you outplay the guy that's in front of you, you're going to start seeing more minutes. I think that's healthy for a team. And I think they have the type of guys with the right attitudes to be able to thrive in that environment.
I agree. My only concern here is if you're saying any preferential treatment, I would like it to lean more favoring the kids. And it's for this reason. It's that, let's say Rondo comes in and completely outplays Lonzo in training camp and then in the preseason and then on into the early parts of the season. Mm-hmm. Well, now Lonzo becomes something of, you know, he as an asset becomes less valuable for the organization. And that's a little concerning, right? If Lance Stephenson comes in and completely outplays Ingram and Kuzma or Hart, you know, all those guys, well then now those guys become less valuable as assets to the Lakers moving forward. And that's from that standpoint is where I would be a little concerned.
But if you give Lonzo the keys to the car and that he's going to be starting and he goes out and plays like crap, yeah. like he's now still going to be a depreciating asset, yeah. like either way, right? Just in more minutes. Like it all comes down to, like, to me, there's no way of hiding. If your guy isn't that good, then there's no way of hiding that from the rest of the NBA in terms of as an asset, you know? So
yeah.
even if you give him minutes and he proves that he's not going to play well, which I don't think is what would happen at all. But to me, like that's a separate issue.
All right, let's really quickly here touch on the rest of the roster that needs to be. They have one, I believe, roster spot open, unfilled. They have 14 guys on their roster as it currently stands. If everybody does, if nobody reneges on their commitment on either side or whatever, they have, I think, $5.5 million in cap space, which is ironically what Boogie signed for up in Golden State. But Brook Lopez is sitting right there. And the Lakers desperately need a starting center. JaVale, if the Lakers go into next season with JaVale McGee as their starting center, I might freak the hell out, which is a shocker to everybody listening, I know. but Brook Lopez, all right, so it's been really quiet on the Brook front. You haven't really seen him connected to very many teams, period. And he makes a ton of sense for the Lakers. Do you think he's just waiting for an offer that might not be coming, or do we think that maybe something might be going on behind the scenes that it's kind of an understanding that eventually they're going to come to an agreement?
I think that they've got Brook in their back pocket, but I think it's related to the negotiations for Kawhi, mm-hmm. where the Lakers have just enough cap space right now where they could stretch Deng and then trade Kawhi for Ingram and picks straight mm-hmm. up, and then have that fit under the cap.
Yeah.
So I think that's the Lakers' first, you know, like they're trying
priority,
to
priority, I guess.
First. Now, is Lopez being patient enough and like he's being awful sporting if that's what he's doing, right? Like yeah. rather than talking to other teams around the league.
He's a real
like,
one if he's willing to do that.
Exactly. because if he does that, then the Lakers can't afford him. And then it's kind of where does he fall in, but if he is playing ball with that, then I would expect him to be back. I think San Antonio is going to sit on Kawhi for a little while. I don't think he can make it to training camp, but I don't think this is a early July trade that will happen, but we'll see.
Yeah, Harrison and I spent the whole last podcast talking about the Kawhi situation. I'm of the opinion that so long as, like today we even found out that Terry freaking Rozier isn't even on the table with Boston, right? So long as that remains the case, I don't know if I would offer Ingram in any kind of trade. And reportedly, that's the case so far with the Lakers, right? So like, I think if you're the Lakers and especially, like, I'm taking personal enjoyment in watching the Spurs kind of wriggle on a hook here. But there's no reason to include Ingram in a trade. There's none.
Yeah, I mean, it's all about – I've said this before, but trading for stars is not about getting equal value. It's what is the best alternative for the team that's trying to trade them. Mm-hmm. That's going to determine what they end up getting back. Now, if you've got 10 different teams battling for – you know, the rights to this guy, then yeah, you're going to get a good offer. Or if you've got a guy under contract for 3 years, like Damian Lillard, who's a name that's starting to come up more and more, mm-hmm. well, Portland always has the leverage to be able to go back and say, well, I mean, what are you going to do? You can't leave us in free agency next year.
Right.
That's what happened when Kobe had his trade demand. Mm-hmm. Dr. Buss was like, okay, well, we've got you for three more years, so we're
still under contract. Like, yeah.
Right. And whereas the Kawhi situation is different. I also think that with Kawhi, there's interesting difficulties in terms of communication that I think could keep the offers low. He doesn't have a normal like agent setup,
or a voice box apparently.
Right. So he's not a guy who has an agent where teams have a relationship with them. Because remember, the one thing that I think we take for granted in this whole thing is what's going on with that quad, and mm-hmm. teams are going to want to have access to those medicals. And then my understanding. Last thing is how San Antonio handles these situations is San Antonio just wants to hear your best offer and will just put it up on their board compared to other teams. Right? I heard this reported. I don't remember who, so I would attribute it if I knew. But they're not coming back with, oh, well, what if you throw in a first round pick? We like that deal. It's none of that. There's no like going back with counteroffers mm-hmm. from where they're at right now. So all of that tells me that this is going to go on for a while, and Spurs aren't going to get a good offer until teams feel comfortable about their medicals.
Yeah, I Spurs are screwed, and so long as they remain screwed, the Lakers have to try to take advantage as best they can. All right, we're gonna cut off the conversation here, and we're gonna take this over to Locked On NBA. So make sure you guys are gonna follow us over there for part two of this conversation, where we're gonna try to figure out where the Lakers. currently stand in the West in the entire league. If they do make a couple additions to their team, what might that look like? In that same kind of conversation, you can follow that show everywhere that you find this show. Thanks for joining us for this one. Have a great rest of your weekend if you aren't going to join us in that part two, and we'll talk to you again on Monday.